Entrepreneurs face so many challenges in growing and running a business. There are mental challenges as well as the material ones. And there is no better way to learn how to overcome these challenges than with speaking with an entrepreneur who has experienced and conquered many of them.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Today, I'm having a conversation with entrepreneur Nicole Moreno-Deinzer. Nicole is founder and editor-in-chief of Epifania Magazine. As the leader of the magazine, Nicole is responsible for the development, implementation, and evaluation of all strategies and activities related to the publication. And as the creator of the publication, Nicole continually strives to bring in new and intriguing articles to enhance and further the readers' minds. Nicole is here to inspire all of you entrepreneurs out there and provide advice on how to grow and pivot your business. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone, Nicole.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm glad that you are here too. So before we get into that amazing topic you're going to discuss, could you tell our audience a little bit about you? We always like to personally connect with our guests.
Yes. So professionally, I'm a founder of two companies, and we'll dive into those companies a little bit more in the interview. I'm a YouTube host, I'm a leader, speaker, and journalist, a lot of things. I think personally, I'm a wife, a sister, an aunt. I love being an aunt because there's something great about taking care of kids and then you give them back. It's awesome. And they're all at different ages. And I feel like in the last year, I got a new niece, a new nephew, my first great niece, and I have a niece or nephew on the way. So it's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah. I'm an auntie too. They call me Auntie Mona. And of course I love being an auntie as well.
Yeah. It's amazing. And that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
So now where do you live? Where are you from?
Yes. So I currently live in Los Angeles. I'm originally from the Bay Area. We just moved from Oakland. I grew up in Northern California in a very medium-sized town called Hollister, California. And it's about an hour south of San Jose. So if you look on a map of California, you see San Jose, you'll see San Francisco. So we're about 2 hours south of San Francisco. Grew up in the countryside, and then we moved to the burbs. So grew up there with my parents and my three siblings. And I went to school at San Francisco State for undergrad, and I went to Mills College, which is a private university in Oakland, California. And so this is my fourth week, I want to say, in Los Angeles, and I'm getting used to it.
Oh, wow. So you're new to, really, really new to Los Angeles.
I'm really, really new. Yeah.
So tell us about your career. You talked about all these things you are. You're a journalist, you're a speaker, you're a founder of a magazine, a YouTube host. How did you get into doing all of that?
Yes, I know. It's like sometimes my mom's always like, you need to do just one thing. I'm like, I want to do it all, Mom. So I actually started my career in the nonprofit sector. I worked in the nonprofit sector for 5 years doing community engagement, which was a lot of me going out into the community and talking about whatever nonprofit I was working for at that time, in hopes to recruiting volunteers and donors and cultivating those relationships. And one day I did 10 presentations. Do not know how I did 10 presentations, but I did it. And then I went to grad school and I realized I sort of fell into the nonprofit sector. I graduated from undergrad, right at the end of the recession. So a lot of the media jobs I wanted to originally go for weren't necessarily there, or, they were doing a lot of pay cuts and, letting people go. And so it wasn't really a great environment for me to jump into because, I had to make money and have to feed myself. So I fell into the nonprofit world. And then once I was in grad school, I was like, this is not really what I love to do. This is just something I'm good at. And I feel like a lot of times we you know, depending on your background and your cultural background, right? Sometimes you just stay at an industry or company because you're good at it, and you have to maybe not just take care of yourself, but take maybe care of your parents or grandparents or people younger than you. So you just sort of are stuck. Luckily, I didn't have all that pressure, but I knew my parents were worried about me starting my own thing, because they're just like, well, you now have like this 401k and you have health insurance and you have all these amazing things. And luckily, with the support of my husband, so again, I'm married. We just got married right when I started grad school. And now I'm giving you guys a long story, but I wanted to make sure if any of your listeners are going through the same thing, I want to give you all the background. And so one of the things I wanted to discuss with my husband was, if I stop working and start something on my own, is that okay? Like financially, right? You have to be a responsible adult and talk to your partner about like, can we do this? And luckily with his support and being in grad school, I was able to actually come up with a business plan, a marketing plan, and a strategic plan for the magazine. The reason why I want to start a magazine was I always wanted to do media. I always wanted to write. Even when I was working in nonprofit world, I was writing for smaller publications on the side and just making some side money or just getting my name out there. And the reason why I wanted to really start something on my own was, I'm the oldest child. I like being in control of things. Like, I'm going to be honest, like that. There's just like, I really like to be in charge. And I really had this vision of, I want to create a magazine that really represents where all my friends and I are at right now, where we're not in high school. We're not trying to find our first love, or, you know, we're not in entry level. We're in this in between where we're not at the executive level yet, but we're not an entry level. We're in this middle, and no one really ever talks about how do you get from entry to the middle and how do you stand out, especially if you're like the only woman in the room, and especially if you're the only woman of color in the room. You know, like how there's not a lot of discussion sometimes around that in media, I felt like. And so I wanted to create a magazine that represented that. And it just, I started first just writing the articles on my own. I had a friend that helped me come up with the name Epifiana. We spent a whole lovely evening at a wine bar drinking a lot of wine. And I'm like, we're not leaving here until we come up with the name, because I wanted one word and I just needed that one word. And Epifiana is epiphany in not only Spanish, but in Italian. And I thought, okay, that's pretty cool. Like, we'll stick with that. And the reason why I picked that word epiphany, because I felt like with everything in life, you don't grow until you have that like aha moment, mm-hmm. right? We all need that moment to cry in our bed or to cry in the closet or in the Target parking lot. But you don't change until you have that like, oh, I need to do this kind of thing moment. And I really wanted to capture that. And so that's why we call it Epifiana.
I love it. Epifiana is a magazine for mm-hmm. women in the middle. I love it.
Yes. So we pivot from just a magazine for women, but a magazine for Latina women. I'm part of a lot of different Latina organizations, and people assumed it was already a Latina magazine because I talked a lot about, you know, being Latina. I interview Latinas and other women of color. And so I was really, was like, well, I guess I'm already doing that. So let's just pivot and make it a Latina magazine. So that was one of the first pivots we did in like 2018.
So when was your magazine founded?
2016.
16. Okay.
Yeah. I graduated grad school and then just went full force on this.
Okay. Okay. So tell us about your features. Like, what type of material mm-hmm. do you have in your magazine? Why would Ramona Houston's audience, the Empowerment Zone, want to go to Epifiana and read the magazine? Tell us some of your features.
Yes. So we interview a lot of amazing, powerful women. We also do a lot of fun articles. Like, I have a writer that travels and she talks about traveling, but traveling, you know, being Latina and, you know, really empowering people to, it's okay to travel by yourself, right? Because, you know, sometimes we grow up in a culture where you have to like be in groups and, you know, sort of live in a world of fear. So that's something she's really mindful of. And she's always talking about that. And we, you know, we talk about Latinx music and we really interview like Latinx stars and people that are coming up. We have another writer that does that. And then we talk about relationships. And I know it sounds like we talk about a lot of different things, but it's a Latina lifestyle magazine. I feel like we have so many components to our life that I didn't want it to just be about one thing. And in the beginning, with any business, you're going to have a lot of people telling you what you should be doing with your own business. And some of that advice is great. And some of it, it's just like, I don't think you see my vision. And one of the things that people kept telling me is like, you need to just focus on one thing. And I'm like, but I get that, like for advertiser wise and focus, it's just great to focus on one thing. But I was just like, I feel like I want it to really, again, capture what it is to be a Latino woman and what it in your everyday life. And your everyday life may focus mainly in work. So that's why we have the hustle section and we talk about entrepreneurship, but your everyday life might focus on like your relationships. So that's why we have relationship advice, you know? So it's just like, I need to have different components because our lives are all, we're not the same. So yeah.
Yeah, that makes so much sense that in Epifania magazine that you're really looking at the whole person, not just one aspect of a person, but what are the needs professionally? What are our needs personally in terms of relationships, in terms of travel? I mean, all of those things are important, especially as we become a global society. Travel becomes even more important. And if you don't have models of people who travel often, you do need to get some advice on travel.
Yes. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So tell us about your growth. What have you seen, changing since 2016 when you founded it, and where our society is now in 2021? And in fact, we're at the end of 2021.
I know. We're getting towards the end this year, guys. I feel like in 2016, what I saw as a society, right, my readers, I felt like a lot of my readers, I don't know how to say this without it coming off like a little bit. 2016 was like a big year, you know, just politically. And so I feel like in 2016, I saw there was more hope. And then as the years went on, maybe just people really going through a lot of changes, like just, you know, either whether they're manifesting new things, whether they are going through divorce, or whether they're just trying to cope living in this pandemic world, in a world where there's might be a lot of people with political views that don't align with them, or people just being scared. And so what I've noticed, at least for the magazine, was, and what a lot of readers love about it, is that it's a place of like happiness and hope, right? We're not going to give into that. It's like, if you want to use our magazine as like your moment to just take a breather and just realize there's still good in the world and that you got this, that is fine. Like, use it for that. And then one of the things that we were really mindful of is creating more content and talking about the issues, like having Latinas have this free forum discussion about maybe issues that are affecting them, and then having more articles about self-care and mental health, because we just realized, like, you know, we have to have a lot more of those discussions.
And I'm curious, because, you know, mental health is an issue within the African-American and Latino, Latino, Latina, Latinx communities, and that, they're taboo subjects that our communities don't want to discuss for various cultural issues. Yeah. So how have you found that your audience has related to the issue of discussing mental health?
Yes. So, you know, I open up the platform to other Latinas. So whether we have a online forum discussion, or we do, we also do a lot of Instagram lives with fellow Latino entrepreneurs, and I'll do Instagram lives with, you know, mental health coaches or business coaches or just life coaches, people that have other Latinas, but maybe a different background than mine, right? That's a big thing. It's like, I never wanted to be the only person talking for the magazine. It's, you know, there's other, because my identity is going to be different from another Latina, right? And so I wanted to have a discussion with someone that maybe grew up differently. Maybe they're first generation or, you know, or on DACA. And so how do we have that discussion about mental health when they have that as their part of their identity? So really, I felt like our readers, if they see us having those discussions, they feel more comfortable just like, you know, asking us questions or just DMing us and just really being more like realizing they're not alone, right? And then even just my personal self and like with my writers, we are all very open about mental health. And so even on our personal platforms, we talk about mental health and our journeys. So then we are like walking the talk. And so if people follow us personally, they're going to see that, like, you know, this is very true for us, right? You know, we're being very open about our mental health, you know, problems and solutions and our journeys.
That's good. Not only that your magazine is used for a platform to have mental health discussions, yeah, but also that you encourage the people on your team to have those discussions individually, because it really does promote trust.
It really does. And, you know, that's just something I'm really proud of all our writers. Like, you know, a lot of times I don't even ask them. It's just part of their identity because they, you know, we're all from similar cultures. And so they know it's like, there is a lot of taboo around talking about your feelings and talking about your feelings out loud or just even showing quote unquote weakness, right? And so, and even for us as like Latina women, and you know, there's also that extra pressure of sort of being the strong one in the household, like, well, the men sometimes come off being looking like the strong one. It's like you're the one that has to be composed at all times because you're almost like the backbone of your home. Mm-hmm. And it's like that's so much pressure to put on yourself, especially for if you're a young Latina and maybe you need to be the backbone of your home because your parents are a lot older, or maybe you're taking care of like your siblings. And, you know, we want to address that as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes sense. So now when you look at, some other topics you explore in terms of the professional side. Can you talk about this middle? I'm really eager to hear your perspective on that. What are y'all talking about in the magazine when you're talking to Latinas in the middle?
Yes. So we talked to a lot of different Latinas that work in different sectors. In the beginning, we talked to a lot of Latinas that work in tech because I lived in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. A lot of my friends were working in tech and marketing. So that was just sort of my first, you know, pool of people. And, you know, when we're talking to Latinas, especially working in tech, you know, it's all about, we talk about that feeling of maybe isolation because you might be the only one. And I know people might be tired of hearing this, but it is true. Like, I've been to a lot of these tech companies for different events. Again, living in the Bay Area, someone's going to invite you to some party, so you're going to be there. And just realizing this is still, it's still a problem. You're still like one of the very, very few. And even if there's someone else that's either Latina or even another Black person, they're going to not be in the same department as you. They sort of like strategically spread you out. Like, you know, so that way, like, I don't know, if investors come, they can see one of us in each department. It's sort of just ridiculous that way. And so we talk about that feeling of isolation and also how to get through that negative feeling and to get past imposter syndrome so you could feel comfortable when you go into that next interview and you're negotiating. That's another thing we talk about, is being comfortable negotiating, because it's like you're only going to get paid more if you ask for more. Like, it's just, that's how it works. And sometimes also discussing that maybe you're not going to get paid more until you leave that company, right? That's a trick of trade. You get paid more when you move on to another company. So that's something we discuss. And then another thing we discuss, because of entrepreneurship, we discuss, you know, really how to talk to your parents about starting a business, right? And, you know, without them fearing the worst. Also talk about health insurance when you're starting your own business and different types of loans to take, or where you're going to apply for maybe grants, because we also realize like a lot of these entrepreneurship books sometimes are written from a more often than not a white male perspective, and they're just like, you can do this. But it's like, we want to be mindful of generational like wealth and responsibility. And there's a lot of people, you may just see them as like a 30 something year old working at a company. Now they're going to start their own business, but that 30 something probably is, you know, maybe having to take care of their parents, maybe having to participate in sending money back to another country, maybe having to pay for their younger siblings' clothes or schooling. So it's not just, oh, they can make money and just take care of themselves. They may have a lot of responsibilities. So for them to start their own business, that there's a lot of more pressures and fears with that. And so we want to address that as well. And not just talk about it, but just give solutions and have people have their other story, hear stories from people that have done it.
You know, I really like your perspectives about, you know, the professional side and how, what type of advice you give to your listeners. Two things I want to you to expand upon that you discussed. That I've heard a lot of discussion about in the last few years is this whole imposter syndrome that many people, particularly people of color and women, imposter syndrome is really feeling like you don't deserve to be where you are, that somehow you are out of place. Can you talk about the imposter syndrome and how you see it as a Latina and the experience of Latinas with the imposter syndrome?
Yes. So I'm gonna be really honest. So imposter syndrome, I still deal with it. I think a lot of people wrestle with it just because it's this fear. And, you know, I always say it's the friend that comes over that you just don't want to come over anymore. It's just always there. And imposter syndrome for me really like took me out for a few years. Like there is a reason why my business didn't grow for the first like year to 2 years, because I was so afraid of sharing my business and sharing like, because I thought it had to be a certain way before I shared it. I thought I had to meet certain marks before I shared it. I thought it had to be completely perfect before I shared it. And then as, you know, as a Latina, there's that also like, you know, you don't always get to see other Latina entrepreneurs depending on where you live. And then also it's, there's this added pressure, and I don't, and I'm just gonna put it out there, but there, you feel like you have to always represent your culture. And so you have that in addition to imposter syndrome. So I was always, and it took me some time to figure this out. Like I was always a little worried because I'm like, if I share my business and it's not perfect, am I ruining it for other Latinas? You know? And it's like this, like being a pressure. And one of the things my dad told all us kids growing up, which for better or for worse, but it, there's some truth to it. He's like, because we're Mexican, we have to work harder. And I, you know, as a kid, you're just like, yeah, yeah, dad, whatever. I just need to get to school, you know? But I remember it's just like, as I gotten older and become more professional, I was like, yeah, you really do. Because there are a lot of situations where I'm like, I'm the only one. And I remember I was in the car one time with a fellow fraternity brother. So I was part of a co-ed fraternity, and he's a young Black man. And then my husband, who is a, you know, oh, he's a young white guy, Dinesher, of course. And so we were in the car, and there is this, he was giving us a ride to back home. And there was this Black homeless person on the corner, and he was like angry about it because he's like, it makes us all look bad. And I'm like, finally someone else says what I'm thinking. And then for my husband, he's just like, what? Like, and he's like, oh, like, you know, he got like, you know, it like, okay, like seeing it from our perspective, you know. And it's just more of just, there's that added pressure that comes with imposter syndrome as well.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that out, that you have both issues going on, this whole imposter syndrome and the pressures of having to represent the Black race, the Mexican race, whatever you want to call it, you know, that we are, we have this pressure that when we come in the room, especially if we're the only, that we don't want to say anything wrong. We don't want to misrepresent our culture or our ethnicity or our race, you know, or whatever, however we define all those different terms, that you're constantly on edge trying to figure out how to express yourself and how to represent yourself. So I totally agree with you on that. The other topic I wanted to, that you talked about earlier that I wanted you to expand upon is the salary. You know, I have a friend and I were talking about this recently, how, you know, we may make a lot of money, we meaning people of color or women or whoever it is in the room. And let's say $80,000 is a lot of money to some people. Okay. So you're making $80,000 and this white man is making $80,000. Those $80,000 aren't equivalent because you are being responsible for people in your family. You're paying for the dance lessons. You're taking care of the parents.
Yep.
You are the one the cousins call when they need to borrow and get their car fixed. And you have the if you will, the extra burden, if you will, I don't know if you want to call it a burden, but the extra responsibility of maybe paying a mortgage, whereas this other person who's got $80,000 a salary, he has received an inheritance, which was his down payment, or they've been in a house for generations. You know, he didn't have to purchase a house. So those two amounts aren't equivalent. And I'm glad you expressed that.
Yes. Yeah. And going off of that a little bit, it's just, you know, I read recently, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. I was listening to the audiobook and he mentioned something. And I was like, that the way he worded it was like, I've been trying to say that for years and I don't know how to say it. It was like, you know, and not, of course, there's going to be people like white people, they have their struggles too, right? We don't know everyone's struggles.
Right.
But as a group, you've had like almost in the US, not in the world, but in the US, almost like a 200 or more head start.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you have to look at it that way. You've had more, there's a higher chance that probably your parents went to college, right? Mm-hmm. Or a higher chance that your grandparents went to college. Mm-hmm. There's a higher chance that your parents or grandparents had higher paid jobs. So you don't have as many responsibilities as maybe your fellow coworker who happens to be a person of color. So it's like thinking it in that way as well. And so I agree that it's not the same. It's not that $80,000 may not be the same in each group.
Yeah. So I'm glad that those are some of the topics that you explore that really sounds exciting. So if people in the listeners in the empowerment zone, you know, your topic today is how to grow and pivot a business. And you've given us a lot of insight on that. So what advice, what calls to action do you have for our listeners who really want to move forward in terms of their business? Like you talked about your business growth from 2016 to the end of 2021 and the challenges you faced and how you have grown. What advice would you give our listeners?
Yes. So again, I've always been a type of person that wants to solve my own problems, right? You know, being a responsible adult. And one of the things with at least the magazine, it started in 2016, was really fighting imposter syndrome, but I knew I needed help for it to grow. I needed other people to be on board. And so one of the things I had to work on was I first, you know, was get comfortable with sharing your business, because a lot of times I feel like your business is like your child, you know, you are very protective of it. Get comfortable sharing your business with other people, and other people are going to see, you know, see it the way you see it, right? You just got to find those right people. Two, you want to write out what exactly you need help with. I feel like we always get really caught up in the vague, right? If we keep things vague, it sort of leads to us being more panicky, you know, just similar to like when we tell ourselves we need more money, right? Okay, what does that mean, right? So me going around saying like, I need help, what does that actually mean, right? And so writing down all the tasks that you have done for your business, right? And what are you willing to give to other people? And what skill set would those people need for you to trust them to do that? And then just from, I've been realizing like it just grew my team. Now we're a team of 11 and people live in different parts of the country. And so it grew organically in the sense that the first two people I met, one found me at an event. One was my Lyft driver. I kid you not. So I'm really being comfortable sharing that. And then they've just been with me since then. You know, one's now my copy editor and one's our beauty content creator. And so from there, I just slowly started like putting it out there, feelers like through my writers, and just got a writer after writer. Like I hired a music writer and she introduced me to the style writer. And so luckily I was able to be able to give them certain tasks and tell people what exactly I need help with, because I had that list. And one of the biggest things that was, I need some people to create content. You know, let me still do the management part because I don't want to give that to someone until, you know, I have a better understanding of what I want to give them. But right now, content, right? We are producing weekly content. And so it can't just always be me. And then also asking yourself if you're ready to lead. I think because now I have a team of 11, I'm more on the management side. And I realize I'm like, oh yeah, people are going to need things from me. It's not just me, right? It's not just me just like, okay, I'll get to this when I get to it for my business. It's like, okay, people are emailing me now and texting me and messaging me on Slack. I'm like, did you see this? Like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, oh, okay, people, now I got to lead all these people. And so if you're not ready to take on that responsibility, then maybe this is not the time for you to bring on other people, because those people are going to really rely on you. Right. Mm-hmm. And you want to be as good of a motivator and leader as you possibly can be. And then some of the tasks, just want to put out there, I give to interns. So we've had interns since the beginning. I have a partnership, really good relationship with my undergrad school. So San Francisco State, and I'm part of their internship program. And so there are some tasks you could give interns. Just make sure to look at the, you know, look at the laws in your state and make sure like you're abiding by them. And, you know, it's been really nice just to have interns just to help out with, you know, tasks here and there. And then again, also being, you know, being there for them and looking over their resume and LinkedIn and talking to them about what they're going to do after college, you know, making sure there's a mentorship component to it as well. Cause I know that's something I really appreciated in my internships when I was an undergrad.
That's great. Those are great pieces of advice for our listeners as they grow and pivot their business.
Oh, can I give
another story?
Example. Okay. So one of the other things I do, and I don't think I mentioned this in the beginning, is I'm a social media strategist for small business owners.
Okay.
And in the pandemic, I realized, I'm like, as a strategist, like me always trying to get clients, that could get really exhausting, right? And you burn out easily. So with that, again, going back to solving a problem, is I partner now with two other Latinas and we created All the Mode branding. And so now we're a team and we get clients together. And so it allows all of us then to get paid the same amount, but maybe maybe there's going to be a client or two that not all three of us are working on, but we're still all going to get paid equally because we're all doing this together. And I just felt like this is a great solution because, you know, all of us trying to find our own clients, again, gets exhausting, but we're in this together, then we can provide those clients with more skill sets, right? So Giselle does a lot more branding, Jessica does a lot more PR, and I'm more on the digital marketing, social media. And so we are able to bring all of that together for a client. So that was something I started in, I came up with the idea in April 2020. So I was like, well, I think the pandemic taught us anything is that we got to pivot our own personal business.
How has that been working out for you?
It's been great. We all had to learn because we're all individual consultants and how to deal with clients together instead of individually, right? We all had different styles, but we learn. And one of the things that, you know, the pandemic allowed us to do was we had time then to meet a lot virtually and just, you know, really build the company from the ground up. And it was a learning curve. And so it's been really great. We've got finished with our first client. We're onboarding another client and it's been really cool.
That's good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So if any of our audience want to get in touch with you, how would they contact you?
Yes. So you can contact me. You could just go to the magazine. It's epiphyanamagazine.com. And then our email addresses are going to be there as well. Or if you go to Instagram or Twitter and you just go to Epiphyana, so it's E-P-I-F-A-N-I-A, Mag, M-A-G. That's our handle on both of those accounts. You could just DM us there as well.
Okay, that's great. So I really appreciate you joining us today. And thank you for all that great advice. I'm going to use some of it myself.
Awesome. I'm glad.
So, Nicole, we're reaching our college strategies portion of our interview. Mm-hmm. So if you could, can you tell us what school or schools did you attend? What were your major or majors? And then what is that strategy you would give students to make sure they're successful in college?
Yes. So my undergrad, I got my bachelor's in communication studies at San Francisco State University at San Francisco. And then I got my MBA with a focus in marketing at Mills College in Oakland, California. And one of the strategies is putting yourself out there and being comfortable making new friends. Right. I remember crying on my first day in the cafeteria because I knew no one and I was very scared. And this was actually before I went to San Jose. I was at a community college and I was thinking, I can't do this. I can't do college. No one knows me. I have no friends. And I remember talking to my counselor and I think she was trying to hold back laughing because I'm pretty sure she sees this every new fall semester. And she just like, she kindly suggested that I join student council. They had a meeting that night. They were doing interviews. And then all of a sudden I was on student senate and I made a whole group of friends and I got to speak at different events in Sacramento. And so it's realizing you are going to make friends and just putting yourself out there and that you'll be fine, you know.
I really like that advice. You're the first person that has given that advice. You know, I'm from a small town in Texas, and I went to school in Atlanta, Georgia, where I knew no one. It was the city. It was an inner city institution, and I was scared half to death. I was crying like you. I didn't know how I was going to fit in, you know, and you're right. And what we don't realize, when we're students, it's that there are a lot of people who are just as scared as you are. They just might be able to hide it a little bit better, but you can make friends and you will make friends. You just have to get through those butterflies in your stomach the first few days, few weeks of school.
Yes. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that advice. And I hope you will join us again on the Empowerment Zone. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.